reached out to New Westminster social planner Christina Rucci. From speaking with her, it became clear that one of the goals of this spice drive is to diversify the output of New Westminster's food banks in a way that reflects the diverse population of the city itself.
Last year, in December 2025, our council endorsed our food security and systems plan. So this plan really looks at where the gaps are in our food system, how we can fill them. It is a lot around kind of the downstream, like how can we feed people right now? But, you know, we have some upstream measures as well, which kind of lead to more sustainability of our food system. So as we were doing the engagement for this plan, we talked to a lot of folks who use our local food banks. And one of the things that came up more than anything else, I would say, is the lack of culturally preferred foods at food banks. And so many of our food, like our food providers across New West, are actually agency partners of the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. And so they get a lot of their supplies from the food bank, and spices and culturally preferred foods are missing. So we kind of thought, like, an easy, kind of fun way to help people, help their meals and make them more flavorful, is that we would remind them I'm home a little bit, is to do a spice drive. And so that was kind of the idea behind it. And so that's what we did.
We also then talked about what sort of spices are being asked for in particular.
It was kind of hard to figure out which spices would be the most preferred by people. So I just kind of, you know, I did a quick kind of survey and Google search of what the most popular spices are for people from, you know, Eritrea or the bigger kind of populations in New West that might be using food banks and food services. So, you know, we kind of came up with kind of a pretty broad list: cumin, paprika, garlic powder, curries.
Lastly, Christina Rucci spoke on the specific areas that people in New Westminster are able to donate their spices throughout the summer.
So we have City Hall at 511 Royal Avenue, Queensborough Community Center, Tamasat Aquatic and Community Center, the Anvil Center, and Fraser Health Public Health Unit, which is on at 610 6th Street. It's kind of upstairs, and so they actually have great hours as well. They're open till 7:30 at night, so a little bit later. The New West Farmers Market will also be collecting them on Thursdays, so they have a bin there as well for people to drop off their spices.
That was Christina Rucci, a social planner for the City of New Westminster, speaking on the Summer Spice Drive, which aims to provide spices to local food banks and food providers for the city of New Westminster. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Come back! You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
Hello and welcome to CJSF 90.1 FM. You're listening to Campus and Community Radio broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories. My name is Nicole and today I am chatting with East Vancouver born and raised MC and storyteller, Frances Arevalo. How are you doing, Frances? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's so nice to connect with you. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Vancouver, and I am enjoying it from outside.
Yes, I love it. So, guys, we are pre-recording. Unfortunately, you don't get to see what I'm seeing, but France is in the most glorious background right now. It is picturesque.
Yeah, I've got the blue sky. It's sunny. I've got like I shot around for a little. I was playing basketball earlier.
Hey.
I've got like the spring glow on me. You know, it feels good.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so my first question that I'm going to ask for you today is: I am a Toronto native, born and raised. However, I love East Van. I have lived in East Van for some time. I don't live in East Van now, but I've always loved it. So my question to you is: what was it like growing up in East Van?
Yeah, so I was born in a hospital, but I was born on, I basically grew up on Fraser Street. I actually did all my grade school in Surrey, actually, but then I moved back with my extended family after I graduated high school, and I've been in Vancouver ever since, East Vancouver ever since. And yeah, I think, you know, my favorite parts about East Van is that, I mean, the first thing, honestly, is that my family is there. It's like, I'm big on like that connection. You know, my first community was my family, still is my family. And the places that I spend time are usually like Fraser Street, Main Street, and like Joyce Collingwood neighborhood. Yeah. So the Filipino community is really present in the form of businesses and shops and studios and stuff like that. So I don't know. I just, it feels this, the areas that I spend time in now feel the most at home I've ever been. And I think it's been like that since I was a child. And I'm really grateful for that.
I love it. And I just want to share that one of the, well, the first neighborhood that I migrated to when I moved here was Joyce Collingwood. And I absolutely love Joyce. I actually miss that neighborhood. So I love that that was part of your, you know, upbringing in the city. I would love to move to a question about your background and your journey with words and storytelling. Can you take us on a bit of a journey?
Yeah, so I think my first experiences with like using language creatively and fully and expressively definitely comes from my family. Like my family is very like communicative at the least, and you know, they are always expressing how they feel and their opinions on things, and you know, I think we're always in conversation. So I think from a very young age I learned that language is a way that you connect with other people. And early on through grade school, like elementary, like I really liked writing stories, and eventually became poems, and then in high school became songs. And it was just natural progression from the roots of, you know, communicating as family, to, you know, share my emotions and share my thoughts and share my stories. And somewhere in end of high school, early university, I got really involved with the poetry slam scene here in Vancouver. So I was performing spoken word. I got involved in like a mentorship program, and I was competing at the local poetry slam like almost weekly. And then when it came to competing, like on the individual side, I was the inaugural youth poetry slam champion here in Vancouver.
Right on.
And I kind of peaked at as a finalist at the Canadian individual poetry slam. I think that was like 2011 or 2012. So as far as my involvement in that scene, it really peaked there, but like, to be honest, I did so poorly at the finals that it dissuaded me from continuing further.
Okay.
So that was kind of the pivot point of like, okay, I still want to write. I still want to be creative. What if it was music and it wasn't competition instead?
Okay.
And so somewhere between 2012 and 2013, like a switch flipped. Mm-hmm. And I kind of dedicated the rest of my creative career to mostly song, and then every now and then the poem.
Love that. And when it comes to your creative career, how important has your culture been for you? Like, I know you talked a lot about family, but you know, you're a Filipino Canadian. How does that play a role in your artistic work?
Yeah, I think honestly, the biggest thing for me is the sense of family and the sense of like collectivism that I've kind of been raised up in. To me, I think expressing creatively is not an individual act. It's like I'm kind of like a plant soaking up the environment and the other plants around me, right? So the stories that I tell are often rooted in my perspective and my first person experience, but the lessons and the insights that I'm pulling from are from my family. They're from my friends. They're from the communities that I participate in. So from the beginning, I think I was raised to know that I don't exist in a vacuum, and I exist as part of a web of other people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if everyone has that same sense or same upbringing. And I think that is very much not unique to being Filipino, but it is characteristic, I think.
Yeah.
Of being a Filipino surrounded by other Filipinos, especially family.
Right.
And I also think in our families, in both sides of my family, there's like a sense of humor that is like very particular, and like little turns of phrase, little like quick things that kind of keep your mind on its toes, you know?
Yeah.
So I think even though my Tagalog and my Bisaya isn't great, like I do think that way of thinking has made its way into my writing in English.
Love it. I love that. Mm-hmm. Now, throughout your career, because you've been doing this for a hot minute, do you have any experiences that have made you super proud?
That's a good question. You know, the one that comes to mind immediately is, so since I was in high school, since like 2008, I think my biggest artistic influence is this hip hop artist named Shad. Right now he's based in Toronto, Ontario. Yeah, he's a legend.
Yeah.
So from like 2008, I remember exactly when I was first introduced to his music. I remember that whole experience. I can still recite that first song that I heard, like mostly front to back. And he knows this, like he knows the influence that he's had on me as a artist and as a person.
Yes.
But earlier this year, I got to open for him here in Vancouver.
That's wild.
Yeah. So he played a sold out Hollywood theater, and I got to open that night. And it was like, it was so like this, that's the kind of moment where, that's one that I would tell my younger self. Like,
yeah.
I'm glad that you kept going, because you just opened for the person that's like kind of kickstarted your artist career.
Oh, I love it. And I'm so like, I asked that question because I'm passionate about like artists, creative. I think it's so important for a city's culture and just even humanity, right? But I also know how difficult it is to live the light of a creative, and to hear like when things come full circle almost, you know, it's I think it's important to share, to kind of at least be an inspiring to others that are out there that are, you know, might not be in that place yet, right? And the fact that, you know, things do come full circle sometimes. And I just love to hear that, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Because honestly, and you were saying like how difficult it is to be an artist. I mean, there's the career and the money and the business part of that.
Yeah.
But there's also the like identity and the existential crises that come with like, am I an artist? Am I not? What am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've like swayed and dropped the artist path many times.
Yeah.
Like it's not been a linear thing all these years. Like, and so I recently picked it up kind of like with a renewed sense of purpose, maybe like last summertime.
Okay.
And because I've worked in the music industry and other roles, but the role of being an artist, like I've recently come back to that, like middle of June, I think last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so to start off the year opening for Shad, I think was a big affirmation that, okay, I'm glad that I continued and I persisted and I think I'm on the right path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now, speaking of this renewed energy and the year that you've been on, what kind of things do you have on the go over the next little while?
Yeah, the biggest thing is that I'm finishing up an album.
Okay.
This album has been 8 years in the making, and it's one of the things that I've dropped off, I've picked up, I've dropped off, I've picked up. And in this return to being an artist, it was the first thing that I was like, okay, I need to finally finish this project.
Okay.
And I think maybe in a sentence, that album is about growing into the artist and person that I've been trying to be all these years. And I think the reason I couldn't finish it before is because I just wasn't that person yet.
Right.
So now I'm like, okay, I think I've grown into who I wanted to be. Let's finish it.
Hey, so when can we expect it then, would you say?
Yeah, at the end of, end of summertime.
End of summertime. Okay, that's great, because, you know, CJSF would love to play some tracks. So I, you know, please stay connected, because I cannot wait to hear for sure. Now, one of the things that I love to talk about on the show is food. I'm also a creative as well. I cook on the side. That is one of the things that I do. So food is important to me. And I am curious, like, what are some of the favorite things that you like eating these days?
Oh, like eating.
Okay.
My favorite, I'm actually close to Main Street right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my favorite thing to eat on Main Street is, if you go to Pho Goodness, I think that's like Main and 17th.
Yeah.
The number 25 pho with lemongrass chicken, but with the pho satay added on top. I know the order.
Hey.
That's my favorite thing to eat. Yeah, I love that dish so much. And separately, like, I recently made, I've been trying to cook and bake more interesting foods again.
Oh, I love
and,
that.
I had some time this weekend, and I made a batch of chewy chocolate chip cookies, and they're like so perfect right now.
Okay, two things. I love that. That is so incredible. I actually am going to put the details to the restaurant in the show notes. You know what I mean? Because I think it's important. People like do listen for food tips and food talk and all the things. So I'm definitely going to include that as well. I can't believe that I'm already coming to a close of our conversation, but I do want to give you an opportunity to maybe, like, is there anything that you want to share with listeners that you might not have shared already?
I mean, I can think of two things real quick.
Yeah,
I think the first thing is that I've released the first two singles off the album already.
Okay.
The first one is called Waterboy, which is about my experience working at this water shop that my uncle owns for like over a decade now.
Okay.
And it's kind of where my music career begins.
Oh.
Because I wrote my first songs there. I learned how to produce music there. So that's Waterboy. And the second single is called Gardens. And Gardens features a local legend and friend of mine named Kimortal. And it speaks to my love for hip hop and like my love for people. Those songs are out. If people want a taste of what the album is going to sound like, those are some pretty good starting points.
Awesome.
And then I think the last thing I'd say is like, yeah, I think it's like a little corny, but like, listen to your heart, I think. Because like, I said earlier, I've picked up the artist career. I've dropped it. Like, I've lost track of how many times I've done it.
Yeah.
And I think last summertime I was navigating a bit of a tough time, and I was kind of like, what do I feel called to do right now?
Yeah.
And it was to pick up music again. And this time it feels like I'm really holding on to it and taking care of it and giving it the attention that it deserves and it needs to grow into what I want it to. So yeah, listen to your heart, because it's telling you things all the time.
Hey, listen to your heart. Francis, thank you so much for joining me today on CJSF. But before I let you go, how could people get connected with you, especially for the tracks that you just mentioned? And then, you know, you're going to have your upcoming album. How can we connect?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Francis Arevalo. It's spelled Francis My last name is spelled A-R-E, V as in Victor, A-L-O. My social media is Francis Ravelo Music on all the platforms.
Awesome.
And then all the music is on all the streaming platforms and Bandcamp. I think that's all of them. And yeah, also like, if you're in Vancouver, I work at Cascade Water still for like part time. So come say what's up. Like,
yes, Cascade Water.
Yeah,
sure. I love it. Francis, thank you so much for being insightful, sharing your journey, and joining me on Beats and Eats. And I am definitely going to ensure that I have like all the links in the show notes, you know what I mean, including ways to like listen to some of your tracks and stuff and to connect with you. So again, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's been so beautiful in the chat.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 14th, Burnaby City Councilor Maita Santiago put forward a motion advocating for a low-income transit pass. The motion called on Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley to write a letter to the BC provincial government advocating for this change. The motion passed unanimously, and afterwards, CJSF reached out to City Councilor Santiago to learn more about what low-income transit accommodations in Burnaby would look like and what the personal importance of this motion was for her.
Yeah, so this this was actually first brought to our attention by Movement. So they wrote to us, you know, to let us know that this is something that they're advocating for. And then recently they also held a rally at the Metrotown SkyTrain station that I was able to attend. And when they raised this issue, it brought back to me my experience when I returned to Burnaby, to Canada, after many years overseas. And I remembered how, well, first of all, how hard it was to find a job after being away for so long. And when I finally had one, I remember going to the SkyTrain station, putting in my debit card, and then not having enough funds to cover like the two-zone fare to get to my new job. Luckily, I was able to, you know, walk a couple of blocks back home, find some, you know, some loose change and pockets and bags, what have you, get to my job, and then get to my job. But so that really, you know, brought it home for me about how important something like this is. For people really just trying to get to work for the most part and really having not much else, I think it can make a really big difference.
During our conversation, we also learned that the motion and subsequent letter from Mayor Hurley calls on the province to expand the already existing BC Bus program, which is currently only available for low-income seniors and people receiving disability assistance from BC.
Yeah, so what we called for in our motion is for the province of BC to expand eligibility for its BC Bus Pass program to include low-income households across Metro Vancouver, so including Burnaby. So I think the bus pass, these subsidized bus passes now are about $45. So that's something that we would like to see for people in Burnaby as well as for people across Metro Vancouver.
This is not the first motion of its kind to pass throughout Metro Vancouver. A few weeks prior, Vancouver City Councillor Sean Orr passed a similar motion, and since our interview with Councillor Santiago, City Councillor Lubick of Port Moody has passed an identical motion as well, advocating for a low-income transit pass.
I think a number of other, you know, cities have already passed similar ones, along with Vancouver and Burnaby. I think City of Langley has, and I think the City of Port Moody, through Councillor Amy Lubick, is also looking to do something similar. And as well, we know that other major cities or major areas, regions across Canada have, low-income bus passes for residents. So, yeah, is it possible? Yeah, I think absolutely.
The advocacy for a low-income transit pass has also been driven by Movement YVR, a Metro Vancouver transit advocacy group that held a rally on July 1st in support of the policy. Councillor Santiago had referenced this as a motivation for her motion, and it looks like other municipalities are beginning to follow suit. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.